Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule. Although as I continue on recently, I've had to put more and more qualifiers in this introduction of, what books I'm reading or if it's been a movie or a book or how long it's been since I've read the book into reviewing it. And that's what's happening, of course, this time out. Joining me on this podcast is Juliana. Say hello.
Hello.
And the reason why I'm not reviewing this book as soon as I finished it is because Juliana also had to finish it. So when did you finish this book?
Yesterday.
And I finished it maybe 4.5 weeks ago before my previous work trip. And that was 3.5 weeks long. And I got home a week or so ago.
You're right.
Beginning of this week? No, when was it? It was quite a long time ago. So it's been a while. But Juliana also... Just explain before that I might not remember everything perfectly clearly. All of the character names and the exact order of all the events might not just spring back into my head. But Juliana also started reading this a long time ago, so it's been quite a long reading journey for you. How was it for you reading through this book? Oh, we haven't even said what the book it is. Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson. Go for it.
All right, so it was quite epic, I think. That was mainly what stayed in my head about it.
What, the reading journey or the book itself?
Both.
Both.
Because I started so long ago that I don't even know when I started.
Yeah.
And it is not a book that you read that I read just fluently through. So there was lots of little bits and pieces there, then stop, then a bit more, then stop, then a bit more, and stop.
Yeah, but you've been really busy with other things as well.
Yeah, really,
and,
yes.
and I've been traveling and things. So we picked up with this book and we kept on. It was a pick-up, put-down book. Of course, I started... Yeah, pretty good. I started reading it as an audiobook and just went all the way through, pretty much. But we talked about this before was it the last podcast where we said from now on, if we're going to both read the book and review it together, you're going to start it and
yes.
You're going to get through to the last chapter. And when you're on the last chapter, on the last quarter, I'll then start reading or listen to it as an audiobook. And
exactly.
Then we should finish up at around about the same time. And this is kind of an extreme example, but we did this before with the Otherland book as well.
Yes, quite similar.
It was quite similar. Yeah. So it's a similar time, but Otherland I'd read a few times before, the first book twice, I think. This book was brand new because it only came out this year. It's a good book. It's called Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson. Juliana, have you read anything by Kim Stanley Robinson before?
No. That was the first time that I heard of that author, and it was the first book that got recommended on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast group.
Yeah, the listener group on Goodreads.
Yeah.
Someone said, hey, Aurora. And somebody else said, yes, Aurora. And then like a third or fourth person said, yes, Aurora is very good. And I'm like, well, I like Kim Stanley Robinson. I've read and reviewed a few other books of his on this podcast. One of them was called another single word title named after a place beginning with A, Antarctica. And I read that book. And then a few other books I think I've reviewed of his. I'm not going to look back through, but... there's the Gold Coast. I think I read and reviewed one or two of those Gold Coast books, which are all set in like the same location but in different worlds. One of them is set in a kind of agrarian post-apocalyptic society where everyone... And then another one is set in like a kind of a cyberpunk society but in the same location and similar kind of characters. And
but
it's a different thing. And then the last one is kind of a utopian society, again, set all in Orange County in California.
That's a really good idea.
And I don't think I've reviewed the last one. I have it upstairs. I've read most of it, but I don't think I ever actually got round to reviewing it. I can't remember. Maybe anyway... Don't remember. So, it's interesting.
So, one question.
Yes, what's
it
up?
It just occurred to me.
Yeah. Kim Stanley Robinson.
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, I was just wondering, because Kim is kind of like a...
Is a guy.
Is a guy, yeah. Stanley. But Stanley could also just be like a second name.
Yeah, Stanley
like
Robinson.
Stanley like Robinson as in Stanley Robinson, not as Stanley.
No, but it's Kim Stanley
Robinson.
Robinson, the last name. But no, this happened to me before when I read and reviewed a book called Children of Men. Is it by someone James, E.L. James or whatever? I can't remember the name of the...
P.L. James.
P.L. James.
Yeah.
And I read that. The first book I read, it turns out female author, didn't review it like that. And I think I called the author a him, but not because, but it's James, like the last name is James. And I was like, James, but again, it's the same kind of thing. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, Aurora, lots of people recommended it. I didn't read his last book that came out, which was called the 2132 or whatever it was called. Some number, should have looked that up.
22, Well, it's on the cover.
It's by the author of. Is it on the cover? Yeah. I don't know. Didn't see the cover. And you're looking up now. What does it say there? From the best-selling author of 2312. Yeah. So not 2132. It's 2312. Anyway, didn't read that book. Mainly because didn't review very well. Other people read it and said, it's not really great. But I have read, I read a good series by Kim Stanley Robinson. The one that he's probably best known for is his Mars trilogy, which is called, there's a book called Red Mars and then Green Mars and Blue Mars. And it tells the long epic story of the colonization of Mars and the terraforming of Mars.
Yeah, it sounds very much like terraforming.
It is terraforming, yes, because it starts off red, turns a bit green, and then it's all blue at the end, which is it's a good book. It's a good series of books, very successful, and I should probably get around to reviewing them at some point for this, reading them.
So maybe I should read them.
It depends how many, if we want to put aside another, like, okay, we started the Otherland series.
Yeah.
How thick was that book? Big, chunky book. Yes, like that again. You know, it's big. Well, it's an epic story. It tells generations and generations of the colonization. Hundreds and hundreds of years go
past. Well, I guess you need that in to colonize Mars.
Colonization of Mars, yeah. So anyway, Aurora, let's just set this up because we want to just set up what the story is about. But we both decided that it's really difficult to talk about this book without spoiling some things in the middle. Very normally true. In books, like, there'll be a big twist at the end, and so you can talk about most of the books without talking about the twist. Other times, there'll be a twist or there'll be a setup, which is a bit quirky, but it's in the first chapter or in the first three chapters, and you're like, oh, well, let's just talk about, you know, like, that's not really a spoiler if it happens in the first quarter of the book or the first few chapters of the book. Whereas here, there's some stuff that happens in the middle of the book which just kind of blew my mind, and I kind of want other people to for that stuff to blow their minds in their own way.
Yeah.
And I think what we should do is just set up what the book is about, give it our general recommendations, and then really get into the meat of the review in spoilery territory. And if people don't care, if they don't care about spoilers, they can keep listening, or if they don't think they're ever going to read this book.
Or if they already read this book.
But let me just put this down as a money bet, but it's one of those things that, like, if someone said, hey, of all the books that you've read this year that came out this year, which one is probably going to win the Nebula and Hugo Award winner? It's going to be this one. Because not that it's the best book that's going to come out this year, but it is probably the most Hugo and Nebula Award winning-ish book.
Is it?
By Kim Stanley Robinson for many, many years. And it's probably coming around to his turn to win again. And there's lots of things.
He already did win.
Well, for Red Mars and Blue Mars and Green Mars, I think those won the Hugo. All of them won some awards. All right. They're good books. They were, you know, very, very ambitious books. And I think this is an ambitious book. And I think there's enough in this. And it presses enough buttons. It'll definitely get nominated. Hugo and Nebula, totally. Even if it doesn't win. So if you're the kind of person who's probably going to, like, I, as I've gone through the Hugo reading projects that I did, the thing where I read every single book which won both the Hugo and the Nebula Award for a single book. I read all of those. And I don't think I'm going to use the Hugo Awards. Oh, and this year, three books that I've read that were nominated for the Hugo Awards.
Yeah.
Just not great books, and they're all nominated. And then there's there was a fourth one, the follow up to the Ancillary Justice. And I was even looking at it last night when I was looking for a new book to download as an audiobook, and I was like, should I just get this? Because it's like, I've heard it's okay, but nobody says it's amazing. Nobody says it's as good as the first one. It won the Hugo and Nebula Award last year, the previous book.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, the books that won and the other books that I read, just, I would never consider these to be great books or even good books enough. And from what I've heard from other people, it's kind of a weak year.
Is that it really is not a good way of judging.
There was lots of other politics and stuff going on this year. So I understand that it was a kind of a different year than normal with all the politics and stuff going on.
Will it be the same politics next year?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I don't even know. But even this book, I could say, would this like slide around the edge of the politics? But I'm just saying that the books that kind of managed to skirt around the edges of to get in with the nominations for the awards that were given out this year is a different kind of thing. So I'm not saying that overall it was a weak year for science fiction. I'm just saying that nobody should use the Hugo Awards of 2015 as a guide to the best books that came out in 2014. However, this book, probably Aurora, Kim Stanley Robinson, will get
at least a nomination.
It'll get a nomination, yes. And it's earned its way onto the nomination list. I think this is actually a good book.
I think so too.
So that's it. So the book is about, let's just, before we get into spoiler territory. Oh, so I'm just saying, I do think it's worth reading. I don't think it's a perfect book. It's not a 5-star book in any way for me. Yeah. I'll give some star ratings at the end from what I remember. But it's certainly a book that's worth reading.
It is, totally. And, because it's just so different.
Yeah, it is different. It's like... And we'll get onto this later on when we get into the spoiler territory. But it's like so many other books that I've read, and every single time I kind of settle down into it, I was like, oh yeah, I've read this kind of thing, I recognize. And then something will like just come out of the side and just punch me in the face and go, nope, we're not going in that direction. I'm like, holy shit, we're not going in that direction. And then it would carry on for a while. And then it would fade down to a bit, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I can kind of see what kind of book. And then it would just punch me in the face and go, no, we're not going in that direction. I'm like, holy shit, why does this keep, like, how can such a comfortable book without a really strong story, without, like, you know, nothing about it was like, well, a lot of things grabbed me about it, but there was nothing like, you wouldn't just say, oh, the best thing about this book is this thing and you've got to read it because of that thing.
Yes,
it's just lots of things that were put together in a way which was so weird that I'm just like, wow, this is actually something new for me. And it's not often that I'd read like a super mainstream popular author who just couldn't pull the rug out from me.
Yeah.
In a way, like, I just like, oh, I didn't even know Kim Stanley Robinson had it in him to write something like this. But it is totally a Kim Stanley Robinson book.
Okay.
Like, it is so much, like, there's so much of him in there and so many themes that he would normally touch on and things that he would talk about. But he was just like, no, I'm just going to, it's going to be a reaction to science fiction and reaction to his own science fiction of the past in some ways. But
all right.
Anyway, we'll get onto more of that when we get into spoiler territory.
To me, that book felt a bit like, I've just been with my mom to this wellness spa kind of thing. And they had these warm pools with salt water.
Yeah.
And there was nothing going on in that. So in that, it wasn't bubbly or so much. It had also bubbly areas, but there were some pools which was just silent water.
And you just hung out in the water.
It was just nice and warm around me, just hanging out. Nothing special going on.
Yeah,
and this is kind of like this book felt to me.
What?
Like it was
you're
like,
just kind of hanging out in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally understand what you mean by that. Yeah, it does feel that way. And sometimes I'm just like, well, I'm just going to, like, I was listening to the audiobook version and it was just being read to me. And some points I was just, it was kind of just flowing over me. And I'm just like, oh yeah, this is good. This is nice science fiction. This is great. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Anyway, let's just do the setup and then I'll let off the spoiler horn in the Incomparable podcast style.
Yeah.
But what it is, it sets up and Wikipedia says a generation ship is launched from Saturn in the year 2545. So it's like distant 500 years in the future kind of science fiction. And and we pick it up and the ship is going and it's been going for 160 years, approximately 7 generations later. I'm just reading off of Wikipedia because this is actually a really good thing. Approaching Tau Ceti system. And it's going to begin colonization of an Earth analog moon, which has been the moon. There's a big like gas giant, and a moon goes around the gas giant, and the moon is called Aurora, and that's what the book is named after. So they're heading. The book opens a generation ship. Thank you very much for this drink. The book opens. It's a generation ship heading towards Aurora, and the main character is. Who do you think the main character is? Go for it.
Me.
No, who do you think is the main character?
But I know who the main character is.
Say who the main character is.
I say, well, Freya.
Is Freya the main character?
Yes.
You see, partly, I would say the main character is the ship. And this is one thing that's interesting that we find out quite early on. This is a spoiler, like we were saying before, spoilers halfway through, spoilers in the first two chapters.
Yeah.
We're reading it and it's being narrated to us and it's like, this is a bit weird and it's a bit story. And then you work out that it's actually the ship, the generation ship itself, has got some kind of basic artificial intelligence, which is kind of telling us a story, but you know, and this is really funny then, you were reading the story. And you were like, what's going on here? Why are they doing this? Like, what? And you were actually saying to me, why is the story? Like, why are we reading about this? And what's going on here? And what we actually have at the start is a character called Devi, who is the ship's like main engineer and kind of the person in charge. There isn't a captain, but there's a person in charge.
Yeah.
Devi. And she is, for all her life, has been trying to teach the ship kind of like how to run itself better, but in the way it's kind of like how to be self-aware, but the way that the story is told, the way that she is trying to get the artificial intelligence to become self-aware and to become to know what's going on. The main tool that she uses, that I mean, or that we're reading about in the book, is that she tries to get the ship to tell a story of what's happening.
And that is quite actually quite difficult because the ship then has to figure out by itself what is the important bits, what is stuff that just nobody is interested in that. Now, and it finds that out by itself.
Yeah.
Now, which is really fun.
Again, don't want to put too many stories in, but this is one of the first things that I worked out. And I was reading it, I was like, this is genius! Like, and it is a really clever thing. And we can talk a bit about this, but this book is about a ship which has got lots of humans inside of it, and the humans arrive at this planet, and of course there's troubles along to get there, and there's troubles when they arrive in the troubles. But that's what the book is. If you are interested in a book which is written from the point of view of a starship artificial intelligence, which is slowly gaining more intelligence and more self-awareness as it learns how to tell stories of itself and how it learns to tell the stories of the humans who are on board it and who are going to Aurora to colonize it. That's what this book is. And just as that idea, it's really strong. I really like the development of the ship.
Yes, and you can actually read it in the different style. Yeah. It is talking or thinking or writing. I don't even know.
Yeah.
So it is also then experimenting with the language.
Yes, it's for a quite straight science fiction, like we're going to the stars on a generation ship. It's quite experimental in the storytelling style in a way which really surprised
very
me.
Much,
because normally all the other books that I've read by Kim Stanley Robinson is I've just been like, and now here is the story. And they, you know, some of the stories, it's not always like what you'd want from like a Hollywood story, like as it goes through A, B, C, D, like it can go in different directions and there's different playfulness. But generally the narrator is quite a straight narrator. It's like, this is the main character. We're hearing their voice.
Yes.
Or this is the third person narrator. You know, it's a very straight. But this is actually quite clever in that we go here and there. Now, I just want to say that the narrator that I listen to is called Ali Ahn. And she, Ali Ahn? I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce her name. But it's interesting that she would follow along kind of with the development of the ship. A lot of the time when you're just in the ship's mind and learning what the ship is doing, she puts on quite a, not a robotic voice, but a lot more stilted, less emotion voice.
Yes.
And then when she went across and we're following along, like we're actually listening to the dialogue of the humans talking, it became a lot more flowing, a lot more human, and then as the ship develops its artificial intelligence, that kind of changes as it, like the voice changes and goes backwards and forwards, you know, to more mechanical and to more
that
human.
Actually,
more,
that actually kind of reflects then what you can read in, and what I've read the ebook, so you can read the development. It's like a not a child, not really, but kind of like a human's development in.
Yeah.
Just very short time.
One book that it did remind me of, it's nowhere near as extreme as this, but it did remind me of Flowers for Algernon, where you start off. You read that, didn't you, in English?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you did it in German.
In German.
Yeah. But that starts off and the language is very childlike because it's someone with a developmental age of around about like 8 or 9 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it goes really intelligent. Now, it doesn't go across that same extreme, but just from a storytelling point of view, there's this really great thing where Devi is saying, okay, don't tell the story of the whole ship. Don't tell the story of everyone. Pick out like one character, and they're like, oh, we'll pick out the character of Freya, who is Devi's daughter, and they're like, let's tell the story of the ship through her story, so we get going there. And then Devi is like, no, don't only concentrate on Devi, on Freya, concentrate on like more people. And then it's like, okay, well, in this thing was this person and 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 this person. And the ship just starts, or ship, it's not the ship, it's just ship, isn't it? In the end, the character is just ship. And it's like, let's now talk about, like, well, it doesn't say let's talk about everyone. It just starts listing all of the people alphabetically in the different things. And I was listening to the audiobook and I was like, what's going on? How long is this going to go? And it just went on and on. And now I understand that if you're reading it as a book, and you didn't have to read each one of those names, you're like, ah, this is going to be a list of names. And you could just kind of scan down the paragraph until you got to the next paragraph. I didn't have that. And it just kept on going on. I was like, what's going on? What's going on? And then Debbie is like, no, stop listing everyone. Why are you listing everyone? It's like, don't just list everyone. You've got to kind of concentrate. And it was a really interesting, like I say, really experimental and really fun in a way. That part was really yes. fun where you actually, as you're working out, oh, the ship's learning how to do this and what to, and it doesn't know what a metaphor and, is. And it doesn't know what quite, a simile
yeah,
is.
Yeah, and but it is also quite a challenge. Even for a human, it would be a challenge if you have such a complex thing
yeah.
and you have to get it down so much. I mean, the ship knows everything.
Yeah.
It knows the temperature. It knows the everything.
But it even talks about that at some point. It's like, and yeah. the temperature went up here and yeah. here. And later on, it doesn't do that. Later on, it's a lot more free and a lot
yeah,
more...
Yeah, it's a lot more like just yeah. a narrator.
Yeah.
So it you can... This is the great... Actually, the genius thing, I think, in this book is that you
One
can,
of the genius things.
Yeah. Is that you see the development of a narrator... in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, compared to other science fiction books where you sometimes have the feeling, it's purely about the story.
Yeah.
Or it's purely about the character.
But this is about the storytelling.
Yeah. It is a great, the great momentum in it is the development of the storytelling of the ship.
Yeah. And also in a way, it's kind of like a really... fun kind of postmodern way of doing it because it allows Kim Stanley Robinson to talk about the writing of science fiction. It's
yes.
like this is like a one of those meta books, not just about the story itself, it's about the writing of science fiction. And it even comments about that. I made a note of this. It's saying, oh, this is a saying, like the book is going, is the saying true? What does it mean? Where would that saying come from? And it kind of gets to the bottom of a saying, and then it says, well, it's a saying, but does it have to be true, or should it just be good? If it says something like that, it's less important to be true, more important that it rhymes or has alliteration. Now, I'm not sure if the ship said that or if that was my note about what the ship says. I think the ship might have said that at some point. But it's not only that, it's sort of like, oh, don't give so much technical detail. And I'm like, and I just read Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson, which is with some of the craziest techno babble and like getting into the weeds of like, and now we're going to have a whole chapter which is purely about orbital mechanics.
Yeah.
And this person goes here and you go 5 meters mm-hmm. per second faster here and you go there and it's called this kind of orbit and you go there and like that. And it's so, and like in my review of that, that's one thing that really got to me, really ground me down, was like, I don't need to know. It kind of presumed that nobody had ever read ever any book, anything about science fiction before, and they were coming into it and they didn't know what a two-stage boost up into orbit was and they didn't know what a Lagrange point was and all this stuff that you just pick up in reading science fiction.
Mm.
And what I loved about Aurora is that it's kind of hard science fiction about a generational ship in the same way that Seven Eves became about a generational ship and, you know, and people, and then it's like, oh, and they're 5,000 years or hundreds of years later, they're like this. And this had all of that and it just dropped all of the techno babble. It dropped everything, all of the exact orbital mechanics. When they came in, it was like, yep. And then they shot the boosters this way and they slowed down by doing that. And they arrived in the orbit and they were in this orbit there. And I was like, wow, he just said in like 3 sentences, more, the story progressed more than a third of all of Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson, like all of what he just did there. Oh, and the ship came in here and went there and there like that. And I was like, that was 5 chapters. That was 9 chapters in Seven Eves. And it's so great. But he even, the ship itself kind of references the points that, oh, I'm talking about Delta V. Like, you know, there's there was quite a few Delta V puns in there. And,
yes,
and
which I didn't all get.
No,
I must admit, I didn't get all this.
It doesn't matter.
Stuff.
It's because the ship recognizes that the important part of the techno babble isn't that every bit of the techno babble is explained.
Yeah.
It recognizes that we need to drop in enough words to know that we've done our homework. We need to drop in enough words. We need to put in enough math and enough orbital mechanics to know that these considerations have been taken into, but we don't need to show all of our homework, all of our workings out, all of our orbital mechanics, all of our spaceship design, everything like that. Only when it comes into the story that the ship wants to tell does it start talking about that. Do you have some notes there?
Well, I have some notes about explaining things, but the handy thing of the starship explaining things
mm-hmm.
is that it starts off and sometimes it's explaining things. So it throws in the words.
Yeah.
Coriolis effect.
Yeah.
And then what was else? Cerebellum working hard.
Yeah.
Well, this is not the style of like a person would necessarily say it, but because it's the intelligence, you can understand why it's sometimes not just using the normal human words.
Yeah, it becomes flavor.
Right.
But like I'm saying, in Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson, every single time that you got to one of those, imagine a four paragraph aside where he explains the origin of the word and the origin of the term and exactly how it works and the physics behind it and then how it goes. Here it just goes, oh, Coriolis effect, what does that mean? Weird gravity and some air movement. Yeah. You know, and it just says, oh, it caused that. It's like, great, I don't need to know everything that's along the way. I don't need all the geometry and the geography and, you know, meteorology and all that behind it. We just need to know there's a storm coming, right? Storm, great, right, yes. We understand that. Let's move on. So that's some good stuff. So it's not dry. It's not like anything.
No, it's not dry. And so I have a few sentences here from the ship.
Go for it.
I hope I can read them.
Yeah.
It looked as if two gingerbread cookies were trying to merge.
Yeah.
This is just, it's just randomly out of the book, but it's just a funny...
Some funny words,
because it's trying to figure out what metaphors and symbols...
And it's not very good at them at the beginning.
Yeah, that is true.
Okay, I want to move on to spoiler territory because there's a lot more kind of stuff that I want to talk about this.
All right.
And I don't want to spoil. I just want to say I think we've sufficiently made people interested in what this book is about before we go into actually what the... We've talked about the storytelling enough. If this kind of catches your ear and you want to check it out, do so. And I will just do the Audible ad. If you want to listen to this, it's actually a pretty good audiobook. Now, I wasn't 100% happy with the narration because sometimes it did get a little bit too robotic. And I was like, actually, you know, I could just pretend that the robotic voice was happening. But anyway, I do want to say audibletrial.com/SFBRP. If you go there and sign up for a free trial, you can get Aurora... by Kim Stanley Robinson for free if you sign up for a free trial. And if you continue on, you get one book a month or 2 books a month. And by doing so, you get a free book. You get a really good deal with audiobooks. It's way, way cheaper to get an Audible subscription than it is to buy the audiobooks as you go through. And you can listen to them on your iPhone, on your Android, pretty much any device you can get nowadays. You can download and listen to the audiobooks. There's about 180,000 books on there. So if you don't want Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson, you can check out anything else. Do you have an audiobook suggestion?
Me?
Yeah, what book are we listening to now? Still haven't got to the end of Alistair Reynolds' Redemption Arc. Redemption Arc?
Revelation
Space.
No.
The follow-up to Revelation Space is Redemption Arc.
All right.
Second, and then Absolution Gap. Yeah. So okay. we're still going through that one as well. So check out any book.
Currently listened to Outlander.
Outlander
by Diana Gabaldon.
That's medieval time travel romance, isn't it?
Yes. And it's because it's the English ebook I'm listening to, it's a lot of
audiobook.
I'm learning a lot. Yeah.
You're learning a lot of Scottish dialect.
And it's quite fun to just listen to it. Of course, it's not always like my flavor kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes gets very rough and
a bit sexy.
A bit too much. Yeah. Sometimes a bit too graphic.
If you're reading sex, it's one thing. If you're listening to it when you're on the U-Bahn and people are getting really steamy, you're like, ooh, this is a bit weird.
Exactly. No, well, I was listening to it mostly in the car and at work.
Yeah.
But still, it's weird. And
it's weird to listen to sex scenes,
but on other bits it's really cool to just listen to, so it's fun.
That's your recommendation.
And
what's it called?
Outlander. Well, it's quite a known thing.
Yeah,
I think it's like from the 90s.
Yeah, I saw
quite some chunky books
when I was looking through Audible. I saw it there as well. It was recommended for me. Oh, it wasn't recommended, but it was on a top sellers list or whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
It totally is, because there were just recently also coming out the TV series about it.
Okay.
So
that's probably why it's
why it's kind of promoted a bit more.
So go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP for that one. And also check out Aurora. Now let's get into spoiler territory. You're going to set off the spoiler horn. Are you ready? There you go. That was a really pathetic.
Really? That was it?
No, I got to go. Okay. There's a spoiler horn.
Well, that blob looks funny.
I'm just stealing.
Audacity.
I'm just stealing mid. Yeah. The waveform looks really weird. So I'm just stealing techniques from other podcasts where the spoiler horn is good. So let's get into it. So the book is about Freya, and Freya is. What did you think about Freya? She's a bit weird.
No. She's not weird. But I just found the place where she's described.
Yeah.
And for some reason, in my head, I just read this out.
Yeah.
She was by this point the tallest person in the ship, 2 meters and 2 centimeters tall, a strong young woman, black-haired, good-looking, quick on her feet, and graceful for her size. She had Badim's smoothness of speech, Devi's quickness.
Yep, sounds good.
Yeah. So for some reasons, like what I didn't have in the other land in my head, that Rini in other land is a beautiful black woman.
Yeah, she's in like quarter Zulu or something.
Yeah, in my head, because of the German actress reading it, she was very white. And here, for some reason, even the name is very Nordic and stuff.
Yeah, like super Nordic.
In my head, because she's tall and strong and black-haired, she was black.
Okay, she is really not black.
I know, but in my head, okay, she was like walking around and really beautiful. Like, and
I think it's funny that I think tall women, but I think Kim Stanley Robinson must have a thing for tall women.
Really?
Yeah, because in the book Antarctica, the main character
is a tall woman.
Is a tall woman. And she was a basketball player or something like that.
Right.
And she was, again, like 6'2" or that's even taller, isn't it? No, she was
2 meters and 2 centimeters.
2 meters and 2 centimeters is really tall.
It's like, really is.
Is what, like?
Well, it's also like a basketball. Like, and for a woman?
Yeah, it's like 6'7" or whatever it is.
180 is really tall already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's my height.
Yeah.
I'm like 182 or something like that. Anyway, it's weird because she is in a ship with weird gravity, and it even says at one point, there's so many generations on the ship that we're getting this thing called island dwarfism.
Yeah.
And I always thought that, you know, when it was read that way and when we got a bit later on and when we found out a bit more about Devi and what Devi was doing, I was like, did Devi engineer her daughter to be, like, was she trying to get straight? That's not in the book, but it was one of those things that kind of an explanation that maybe the ship didn't talk about, or Devi didn't talk about, Freya wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
That she was actually, like, Devi wanted to kind of reverse some of the trend of people, the island dwarfism on the ship, and to go back in. So Freya is an interesting thing. She's our main character. She goes through, and she's the character who, it starts off in the book and we end with her as well. So she would be the constant point. Except for the character. Now, the thing is about Freya is that I thought she was a really interesting character, but this is one of the amazing things about this book, is that every time in a book I think, well, obviously the most intelligent thing to do is this, or the best thing to do is that, or the rational thing to do is this. And then the next page, that character does that thing.
Yes.
Freya always did the other thing.
Yeah, but this is the whole point about her personality.
Yeah, she didn't do the right thing. And again, let's just get right to the spoiler part of this, middle of this book.
All right.
This book, this is the big spoiler thing that really informs everything that I want to say about this, is that this book is called Aurora. And the first, say, third of the book is them approaching Aurora, and they arrive at Aurora. And then the middle third of the book is they go down to Aurora, or the next bit into the halfway of the book, is that they go down to Aurora, or quite a lot of people go down to Aurora, and it turns out it's not a disease, it's this little, what is it called, a prion, a prion? I'm not entirely sure.
Well,
if it's
they
a
prion. Didn't really find a name for
they
it.
They didn't really find it. End. It's this little thing which kind of gets in. It's like this little life form which just fucks people up. And everyone down there dies, and one person comes back up, and there is this little ship that he's on. He takes back up, but he never gets inside the ship again.
Yes.
He kind of just stands on the outside of the ship.
Well, he does.
Yeah, he does get back on. This is only one of the spoilers, but this is the spoiler that got to me in one way. This is why I want to talk about Freya here, is that they come back up, and then they're like, okay, now what do? We can't be on Aurora. And I'm like, what do you mean we can't be on Aurora? It's like they're going to find a solution to the prion, because the book is called Aurora. And then they say, oh, what we should do is we should go across to this other planet, or we should keep going, because the whole point of our thing is that all of humanity isn't just in the solar system. We have to spread out.
Yeah.
Because if we're all in the solar system and something happens to the sun, where everyone gets wiped out, that's the whole point of this mission. And they have this meeting, and then Freya just says, well, what we should all do, we should go back to Earth. And I'm like, no, because it's stupid. That's what they do. And it was one of those crazy things that she manages to talk around most of the people. There's a lot of issues at that point as well. But she talks around most of the people, and they put part of the ship off to stay in the system. And the ship turns around and goes back to Earth. And I was like, what the fuck? And I kept on thinking, well, that obviously they're not going to go all the way back to the Earth because the book's called Aurora. And Aurora isn't what the book is about. That's just like a problem that came up that turned them around and sent them back to Earth. And I've never read a book like it before, which is like, ah, we're going to call this book Mars. And at one point they kind of fly by Mars and go, oh, look, there's Mars. And then they go off just in another place. But it couldn't have been called Earth because that would have given away that it's about them going back to Earth. Or it couldn't have been called this. What did you think of this? Was this surprising for you what happened halfway through the book as well?
No, I wasn't actually that bothered by them going back. I don't know. I think it would have been nicer to actually explore just more of what was there and Aurora. And yeah, as you said, the problem with what happened there, they were just not curious enough. I don't know. But what happened was that first at the beginning, we were also spending a lot of time with Devi.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed her character.
Oh, you want to bring this up again?
Well, yes, because this is what...
spoilers again. Devi dies. And I couldn't believe it when you were reading the book. You turned to me and was like, Devi's dead. Yeah. I can't believe Devi's died. And I'm like, yep, I was thinking that same kind of thing.
Yeah. That really got
to me. You didn't know it was going to happen?
No.
Yeah, because you thought Devi was the main character or was going to be through the book as well. Yeah.
Yes, because she was a strong person deciding and good decisions and stuff. And then we spend the time with Freya. And, well, even though she's... tall, beautiful, and whatever.
She's a bit of an idiot.
Not an idiot, but she's a bit naive.
She's naive and a bit dim, but she's tall and people looked up to her.
Yeah.
And this was one of those great stories that, like, normally these stories, there's a long history of stories of, generation ships and people going on board, or like a new society being set up and the society kind of falling apart. And generally the reason why it falls apart is because there's one person who's a bit too strong-willed and they kind of get too much power and they kind of take over. And here it's like the opposite of that. It's like he's read, these other books that also Kim Stanley Robinson has written himself, even just to contrast this book with Seven Eves, where I even said in my review, did you did the review with me with that
one?
Did you?
I was sitting here.
You didn't read the book, but there was this one character who was the spoilers for this book is the president of the United States, who was just this sociopathic, megalomaniac woman. I think she was meant to be a bit of a Sarah Palin, but not quite, because, she's really, really right wing. This is very centrist. Like, she was courted by both sides to become the, vice president nomination or whatever it was.
All right.
And she just comes up and just takes over. And I'm just like, no, kill that person. She is deadly. She is going to disrupt the mission. She's going to be really, this is really bad news. Anywhere she turns up, she's really bad news. And it's like so cartoon villainish. It's like, it's so obviously the bad thing. This is going to cause trouble. Mm. Whereas in this book, there wasn't any one person who was obviously bad, but it was like this naivety of Freya. You're just like, no. And it was so amazing. Like, decision after decision, she would go, right, what we should do is this. And I'm like, no, that's a bad idea. And then they would do it. And I was like, oh, what would you do? This or this? And I'm like, well, of course, there's only one sensible way to do it. And Freya is like, let's do this. And I'm like, no, stop listening to Freya. But it was interesting to read that it is just like, it was like a group of children being led by the idiot child. And there's other people who are more intelligent. They're like, no, listen to these other people over here. They know what they're talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, even the time when they did listen to other people, when it was a bit like...
oh, yeah, everything was going to go wrong.
It was just chaos.
Yeah.
And they kind of missed the person saying what was going on. And I find it quite impressive because this is part of also the ship developing a narrative, because it just picked her.
Yeah.
And then it's just
well, it was because it was Devi's daughter.
Yeah, of course. But it just sticked with her. And then, of course, it had to just then also continue just...
telling her story.
Just telling her story and telling what Freya was doing. Mm. I thought the whole time that I would rather have to stick with somebody else, but it just happened to be Freya.
Yeah, but again, at some points, and this was the thing that this book kept on doing, it kept on lulling me into this situation where I was thinking, oh, I know kind of what this story is. And then, like I said, it should kind of punch you in the face and go, aha, I'm actually doing the opposite. And I was just lulling you into... But that part's where I was being lulled into it. And I think I was telling you when I was listening to this audiobook, I'd get into this rut and I'd be listening and I'd be like, oh, the last hour of this book hasn't really been grabbing me. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, it's not really doing me. And then like 5 minutes later, there'll be like another revelation or a big twist in the story. Mm. And I'd be like, holy shit. Oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. And it was just one time when they were doing this and there was stuff going wrong on the ship and everything was going bad and stuff. And the people were revolting. There was civil war on the ship and things. And then it just said, I didn't mention that there was actually, when we set off from Earth, there was... two ships. And I'm like, oh shit, did you have the same thing where you when it was revealed that there was actually a ship that was destroyed?
Yes.
Because the people on board were revolting because they were like, we want to breathe. No, we can't breathe. There's none of it. We have to breathe. Yeah. And then someone, like the ship blew up, the other ship blew up. And when I read that, I was like, oh shit. And this has been done in other science fiction books, you know.
But I know that this was quite sudden that came up, but it had absolutely no impact on the story to me.
No, it didn't have, but didn't it cast everything that had just been happening into like an oh shit kind of moment that you thought it was just this little squabble going on here between these people and those people, but then it suddenly was like, oh no, this is serious shit. Didn't you have that reaction to that
no,
at all?
I was quite touched when the ship then kind of took over and
yeah, well, and that's another thing that
well
happened.
That was more impressive
again,
to me.
Again, I read so many of these generation ships going back to like the not the Rondo of Rama, the next one, like the Children of Rama or Rama 2 and Children of Rama or Rama, whatever, I can't remember this one. And they have the similar kind of thing that everybody's on board a spaceship and they're traveling in the distance and then the bad people start taking you over and it's like, yeah, okay, I read this. And then there's been other shit. Also, Alistair Reynolds, his Blue Remembered Earth series as well. There was the second one of them with the elephants in this generation ships going along. And that also tells the story that there's lots of these different generation ships going along together in the same way as this. And one of them blows up and everyone's like, oh shit, suddenly it's serious. We can't let, you know, if we're in the middle of, we're going at 20% of the speed of light. We can't just blow up, you know.
Yeah.
And so when that happened, it just... Kim Stanley Robinson knows what other kind of science fiction he's referencing in here.
Yeah.
And he's playing with it in a way which is almost too good because I'm like, oh, I've seen this done before. Oh, I know what happens in this. Yeah, I know what kind of thing goes. And then he just goes, nope, actually, I'm doing this other thing. And when the ship took over and was like, I'm just going to take all the oxygen out the air and everyone's going to just relax. And then I'm going to close the doors and we're going to move. And when that happened, I was like, yes, it was kind of one of those fist pump in the air moments where...
Finally, there was somebody
somebody has taken charge and it was the ship. And all that time, you're like, ah... That's what the ship has been learning for this entire book. Up until everything it's been doing up until this point has been getting to the point where the ship can take responsibility. It's grown up enough. It's gone from like this person who didn't really understand what humans are like to actually being the person who is most qualified to be in
responsible.
Charge. Be in charge.
And also, I really, really like that, the way it did it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, I'm just going to show off here. No, it did it in very like...
Yeah, it did it with sound and atmosphere, didn't it? Like the oxygen and the sound.
And it said,
in the air.
All right, this is a point now where I will interfere, and that's it. After that, it's totally fine. You take over again, humans, but...
I'm in charge.
You have to know
that
I am the person here.
Yeah.
What is it saying? The big police? No,
I am the law or something like that. Yeah.
Amazing. That was great. I am the law.
Yeah.
I'm the sheriff.
And then, and the stuff that where they went down onto this ship, and I do realize that actually what he starts talking about when he goes down, when they go down onto the planet of Aurora, I'm like, oh, okay, this is where he does his red Mars, green Mars, blue Mars terraforming kind of thing. And he went down there and he completely wrote against that. He's like, ah, people always thought it would be like this to do. Like, he's talking about, actually, he's also talking about the colonization of Mars, how they thought, oh, we thought it would only take a few hundred years, but actually it's going to take 10,000 years. And I'm like, that's weird. He's kind of writing against what he, like, he's kind of refuting red Mars, green Mars, blue Mars in this book about talking about, actually, it's going to be a lot harder to terraform Mars and it's going to be really annoying. And that's what he's doing in Aurora as well. He's like, oh, no, it's not. We're going to go down and... And I knew stuff was going to go wrong down in Aurora, and it kind of set it up in a way. And it's like, and they go across here, they're going across this river, and they fall in here, and oh, someone's ripped their suit. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. But actually how bad it got came out of nowhere. I never, like, I don't think I've ever read a, hey, we're visiting another planet to terraform it and settle it, where it lasts just a few months and then they just abandon the planet and go away. There's always like, oh, this is this bit where it's a bit harder, but now we're going to get down there and we need to modify this and we've got to do this. It's like, no, we're just abandoning the planet. I'm like, oh, really? You are going to abandon? And then I didn't understand how he was going to do this part of the story when Freya said, what we should do is turn around and head home again. I'm like, but you're not the ones who are going to go home. And I really love the part where they're saying, like, we're out here colonizing Aurora or this part, this other solar system.
Yeah.
But we didn't choose to be here.
Yes.
Like, our long lost ancestors, they were the ones who decided we should be here doing this work. But I don't want to do the work. So let's just get back on the ship. And we're going to die on the ship anyway. So let's just head home.
Yeah.
And our children, our descendants can just have a comfortable life when we get back home again. And I was like, okay, first of all, no, this is the wrong way around. But I understand that these people weren't the ones who decided to do that.
And this is the thing that I really enjoy about this book is that he brings up all the problems that appear in science fiction, if you think it this way, that things might happen in the future.
Yeah.
He brings up all the problems that happen on these generation ships because there will be a fraction of people starting from Earth and they will be the first ones deciding, oh, I don't want to be on Earth, I want to be somewhere else, and the people following them,
seven generations,
they can't decide.
Yeah,
they are trapped in that spaceship, they can't go anywhere, and they didn't decide to do it. And so it is also kind of like growing up children again who are born where they were born.
Yeah.
And they didn't choose to be born there. They didn't choose to be looking like this or like that. And then kind of like realizing, oh shit, I was born here. Actually, I don't want to be here. So I go somewhere else.
But this is the crazy thing, which again is coming back to this thing that I just didn't expect. I've never read a book about a colony ship which is going somewhere else where they just go, no, actually, this is too hard. We're just going to go home again. And why is that a surprise to me? Like, why is that something novel to me? And this is the thing that I understand is that this is a book that's in kind of, it's making me think about some aspects of science fiction in ways that I've never thought about it quite so much before. Yes. Like, not just about the AI stuff and the storytelling stuff, but actually about, like, well, what is science fiction? What is human, like, and the way that he gets around it is like, well, the people thought they were going to die on the way back to Earth, but their children would get there. But this is another cool thing. I was like, oh, so this story is just going to follow a lot. These people, they're all going to die on the way. And then they go, ah, cold sleep. We've worked out cold sleep. We're all going to go into hibernation and we're going to survive and we're going to get back to Earth. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. And then there's this whole section of the book in that, like, you know, in that kind of like, you know, another like middle half of the second half, like the, you know, the section where everyone's asleep and it's just the ship talking to itself and just going, I wonder what I need to do.
And to Yoki, who is still
Yoki, who's the guy who wakes up. Wakes up Yoki and is like, oh, what's going to happen here? And that whole section, I was like, this is crazy. Like, he's just had this whole story and he just puts all the main characters to sleep and then he just has like the ship just talking to itself and trying to go, I wonder what language is like. Oh, I've got to do this and I've got to get
the
there.
The ship is trying to figure out the best way of slowing down.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we can't really slow down, but if we dip into this atmosphere of Saturn and then fly around the sun and do this stuff.
And it sounds a bit like one of the flipper, who do you call them?
Flipper
machines?
Pinball machines.
Yeah, pinball machines. In German, they're called flipper.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, there's the little things that flip up and down.
Exactly. And then the ball goes round things. And this is kind of what happens to the ship. It gets bounced around. Yeah.
And I thought that was really great as well. That whole section is one of those times where it kind of feels long, but you're just like, oh, normally we'd just skip over this bit. And it's like, oh, no, we swing around there. Another four people have died in hibernation. Swing around here. Oh, another eight people have died. And I was like, oh, right. Wow. Right. This is actually hard. And this is a hard problem.
This is also the part where it gets more and more to the ship feeling more like a mother.
Yes.
To them.
Yeah, definitely.
It knows everyone and it kind of has a relationship to them, even though it's not real.
Oh, yeah.
And it's totally like, oh, and another of my children died. And
well, that's like, what it is. At the start of the book, Devi is the mother and the ship is the child.
Yes.
At the end of the book, the ship is there.
Yeah.
And I know this is weird to get into the symbolism, but this is why this kind of thing works in fiction, is that, was it Yoki as well? Is the kind of like the father figure, even though the ship has not had there's no gender to the ship. It's always a ship. It's not male or female. But in the end, what does happen is that there's kind of a mother-father kind of thing there. Mm. And a weird kind of marriage and giving birth, and then the birth goes down to the earth. But I'm just saying that do you understand?
Here. Yeah.
And then the ship and Yoki go off and continue their adventures together.
Yeah.
By, I think, crashing into Saturn and dying. Oh, no, they burn up around the wrong side of the sun, don't they? Something like that.
Well,
if we manage to make it around the sun one more time, we'll end up at Saturn and we'll be fine. And they don't come out from the other side of the sun.
Yeah, but does that mean that they didn't make it?
All it means is, I can't remember. I think, because this is a while back, but when I was reading it, I was thinking, because I listened to it, so I didn't go back and, you know, check the exact wording. But as far as I know, they went around the far side of the sun and didn't come out the other side.
Yeah.
But did they try and get in, or did at the last minute think, actually, let's just keep just going straight on?
Exactly, that's my
idea. And they kept
on
going straight on. So did they survive? I don't know. But I really like it. Even at the end, I thought, oh, and now we're going to find them, and they're going to call them from Saturn. They're like, hey, we're in Saturn. Yoki's going to die on board, and then I'll project my brain, and we'll all be fine. No, just never hear from them again. I was like, did they die? Did they not die?
And it's like the same, this is kind of another spoiler, but this is another...
Oh, we're well into spoiler territory.
This is another one where, like, the same way that Devi's death kind of hit me.
You were devastated. You turned to me and like, and the ship's gone. What's happened to the ship?
Yeah. And it just it's not like I still think it just went around the sun and just went on.
Yeah.
It's just that it just suddenly just wasn't any topic anymore.
Yeah. The ship was gone, and they had a bit of, it's kind of like an epilogue of the humans back on Earth, and did people like them or didn't like them, or what was good with them? Were they ill? Were they not ill?
Reading it, and I was thinking there must be another twist or another thing.
No, I think the book could have ended with them going around the sun and not knowing what happened, because there is a kind of like, hold on, Yoki, let's go in. It's like, let's do it. Let's thread the needle one more time. And they kind of zip away. If the book had ended there, I'd be like, oh, that's an interesting end to the book.
Yes.
But I'm actually glad that there was a bit more after that with them arriving, like the humans arriving on Earth. I do think that's probably the weaker part of the book, because suddenly the ship isn't telling the story anymore, and it becomes...
Who is then telling the story?
Well, I'm not entirely sure.
I just put down a question
before
we started the show, which was, who, after the ship is gone, is telling the story?
Well, I'd like to think that it's actually the ship. That
exactly.
Years later, the ship does actually broadcast itself back and, you know, somehow get in contact with Freya, and they'd share each other's story or something like that. But that's not really... What I do like, though, is when they come back to Earth, is that the Earth is fucked. And they're like, oh, shit, all the ice caps melted and the sea level has gone up 80 meters. And they're like, there's no beaches anymore. And they're like, what do you mean there's no beaches? And yeah, because actually, if the sea level just rises really quickly, where all the sand is now, has it been, because it's been washing up there for millions of years to make these beaches, and it's been really slow sea level change. And so the whole end section is when Freya goes to a real beach and is hanging out on the beach. And I actually really, I liked that section. It's the bit on Earth between the, you know, that last passage, that last chapter where she's swimming and almost dying and then getting out and having conversations.
Yeah.
I quite like that ending to the book. It's very low key.
It's very low key.
In a way. And then you were reading it and you were like, oh, I've got like 28 pages left, but you didn't realize 25 of them were going to be appendixes and notes or whatever they were.
Yes.
Or coming, next book coming in the future or
something
like that.
And
you turn the page and it's just like, that's the end. And you're like, hold on, what's again? And it's there's so many of these times that you were having to me where you just stop reading and go, oh, it's so, so much happened, like what's happened there, like that. That's what I was having, like all of these different phases. I'd get into this lull and I'd be like, oh, the book's not really doing it for me this last 45 minutes or hours of listening. And then something would come along and I'd be like, oh, but I didn't have you to turn to the side and go, oh, what's happening to this? And every time you do that to me, I just were like, just keep reading, I don't want to say anything more.
Well, I kind of think what you kept on saying, that it's called Aurora and you expected them to be on Aurora. I think Aurora is really in a metaphorical kind of way. It is not only meaning Aurora, the planet that they are wanting to go. Aurora also means sunrise.
Okay.
Right?
Well, it's kind of light, I think, isn't it? Aurora?
I thought Aurora means sunlight.
Okay.
Sunrise.
Just type it in. Google it.
Well,
Aurora? No, that's just the name of the book.
I just put it in here.
Okay, you Google that, because I've got other things to say. Aurora shootings, Aurora, Illinois, is a natural... Oh, that's just talking about the Aurora Borealis.
Yeah.
And the Aurora Australis. Aurora was the Roman goddess of dawn. I think that's probably
dawn,
what you're thinking
that's
about.
Yeah, yeah. So, and this is kind of reflecting, especially in the last few, in the last chapter, when it's actually about the dawn. Remember?
What? Because the sun is coming up when she's on the beach and things.
She's going on the beach in the dawn.
Yeah.
And having her, like, I don't know, her being okay with being on Earth and stuff.
Yeah.
So it is also a metaphorical kind of aurora, means that something is, it's like a, if you have this pling moment, if you have like, I know this. How do you call this?
An epiphany.
Yeah. Aurora can in this sense also mean an epiphany,
mm-hmm.
and so we as a reader get lots of epiphanies over the book.
Yeah,
and also the ship gets it, and the humans on the ship.
Yeah,
while they are realizing that Aurora is actually not suited for terraforming and humans at all.
Yeah,
and so there are lots of little auroras all the way. Do you understand?
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah?
Yeah, maybe. I just think it's a joke. Like the title. Well, really? Not a total, it's a joke. I think it's just either clever writing or like maliciously. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not sure what else I want to say about that. I'm just saying that this was a book that kept consistently slap me around the face and go, ha, this is actually not the science fiction you were signing up for. And even when I thought I was getting the science fiction I was signing up for,
you still didn't get it.
It still didn't get it.
Yeah.
And it was never not a Kim Stanley Robinson book, but it's definitely the most unusual of Kim Stanley Robinson books that I've read, and probably one of the more unusual science fiction books that I've read this year, because it's so straight science fiction. All of the tropes of all science fiction is right there. You've got the generation ship, you've got the artificial intelligence, you've got like the societies that are breaking down, and you've got the rebellion, the civil wars between them, you've got the landing on different planets, you've got the terraforming, you've got all those kind of things. And it's just all put together in a jigsaw. And I'm like, no, half of the pieces in the jigsaw are the wrong way up. Like half of the pieces are flipped over. Like it's not the overall picture. Even though all of the individual elements there, it's just put together in a different way. And I'm like, how can this be such a traditional story in so many ways?
Yeah.
But just be like this is like, what, it was like a 15-hour audiobook or something like that. How many pages? It's got like, it's audio. There's an ebook pages. It doesn't really matter. It's a bit more difficult to say.
545.
500 pages. So in the paper book, say like a 300-page novel or whatever like that. I don't think I've ever been caught off guard so many times in a novel and then been lulled back into, I'm just reading a novel, and then been caught off guard. It happened like I was majorly caught off guard maybe 7 or 8 times. Normally, a book could do that to me maybe twice.
Yes.
For it to happen 7 or 8 times, like majorly times, and I'm reading it and just be like, oh shit, like that. And so it happens, and I'd be just like, what's everyone doing? Like, no, this can't be the way it happened. Mm. Normally it happened 2, maybe in a really weird book, 3 times.
Yes.
And it happened 7 or 8 times in this book. Even to the end, the way it ended, like that last chapter, I'd be like, this is interesting. This is reading very much like a Kim Stanley Robinson chapter. But not the last, and I was looking at the audiobook count its way down. I was like, but Summit's gonna, like, what's gonna happen? Because it really did feel like, one of those Gold Coast books, like a chapter in the first third of the book, which is setting up someone's character that they're gonna do something later on.
Yeah.
It felt like that, and I'm like, oh no, now we're getting to know Freya, like, up close, and what she's really like to be a human on Earth. Like, this is what she was aiming for the whole book.
Yeah.
And now she's finally discovering what it is. And it does make sense as a conclusion to the end of the book. I think some of the stuff with all the humans on Earth just before that is a little bit, is a bit weak.
Yes. But and how they get treated like just a group.
I think it could have been an interesting thing is just to cut that section out of the book. You know, the ship and Yoki fly around the sun.
Disappear.
And then cut to, like, 4 months later, Freya on a beach. I think, that little section was a bit weaker at that point. But, anyway, there is one final thing that I wanted to do. Like, the thematic idea of this, that terraforming is just too hard and we should just give up and go home.
Mm.
It is one of those things that I'm not sure if I'm just reading this into recent science fiction, but what happens at the end of Gravity? We watch Gravity. What's the ending of Gravity? What's the overall focus of Gravity? Sandra Bullock wants to get
Back Home.
Back Home. We watched The Martian. We talked about that on the previous podcast. We read the book. What's the overriding thing of The Martian? Mark Watney wants to go.
Get back home.
Get back home. And this book, I'm reading it, and you're just going, oh, like, they're just going to go back home. And then they do, and that's what the whole... And I'm like, this is very... It's a bit weird, but it's like, is this comfortable or is it realistic? Is it just going to be too hard to colonize Mars?
Well,
is it just going to be too difficult to go to another planet? Like, is this pessimistic? Is it like inward looking? Is it like, oh, back to Earth kind of science fiction? Because I do find this kind of, and also in the same thing with Seven Eves, the whole section at the end is like, we've gone into space, the Earth has been destroyed, and now we're going to terraform Earth and we're going to go home. And I'm like, but you have all this amazing space technology. Why aren't you going out into the world? And why aren't you going up to Mars and stuff like that? And that was never really addressed in there. But, I mean, it was kind of referenced that other people had gone elsewhere, but it was very much about, oh, we've been into space, we survived, but now we're going home. And I don't know if it's that much, if it's in wider science fiction, but there's just a few of these themes that keep coming through with Aurora, with The Martian, with Seven Eves. It's like, it's kind of a very Earthward looking science fiction.
Yeah.
And I've grown up with science fiction, which Earth was like, ah, well, let's leave that behind. Now let's get out there and let's go off to Mars and let's go off to Venus and let's go off to Jupiter and let's fly to other stars and let's go here. Let's go through wormholes to other places. Oh, we're outward looking. And here it's like, and let's go back to Earth again. I'm like, but this is like the fourth story that I read recently. Or, I don't know how many stories, but I'm just saying it just feels like a thing. And I don't think I'm the only person who must have picked up. I think someone sent me a message before about a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or no, they said something about this and I was like, oh no, it's very much because going back to Earth and they're like, yes. And whatever. So
but
it
what
does happen.
This book made to me was actually this was so vivid that I was actually trying to imagine myself in this position and like being I kind of had the feeling of being lost, being not able to return to Earth. Because you're so far out.
Yeah.
Because you don't really have anywhere to go. You're relying on a ship where what is dividing you between the massive nothing out there, the vacuum of space, is like a few centimeters or something.
It's crazy.
And this is just crazy. The idea about flying out into nothing, don't knowing... is there anywhere to actually go? Is there a goal where you can go for?
You know what? No.
Exactly.
There's not a goal.
And it's crazy. And then I just think, okay, maybe the next generations would think different about it because they don't know Earth and this is not their home. But because humans are so much like humans, we are animals. So it is kind of in our genes to like, I mean, they took Earth with them, and so they didn't really just let go of Earth.
No.
So,
but there's no way to let go of Earth in that way.
Yeah, and so I totally understand the whole idea about these people being totally lost without any route, really. Like,
yeah, no roots.
No roots and nowhere to go to put new roots in.
But this is the weird thing. Like every other science fiction book that I've ever read. They've made it work. They've gotten, and of course, there is half of the ship does stay behind, and we don't find out what happens to them.
We don't know what happens to them. Maybe there's a sequel.
And I was just thinking as well, I can't remember exactly, but when I was reading it, I was thinking, oh, one person died because of the prions, and then they came back to the ship. But the rest of the people don't die because of the prions, they die because they're blown out of an airlock. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I was thinking, maybe all those people weren't going to die of the prions, and maybe the prions weren't going to...
didn't die either.
No, but he wasn't exposed to it because he went off... As soon as the prion started, he was like, I'm out of here. And he went and sat on that ship by himself, didn't he?
No, he was in a car the whole time.
Oh, yeah, he sat in a car. My point being that, like, maybe they could have made it work. Like, the thing is, if they'd have just hung out around in orbit around Aurora and just sent back... and just because they kept
more
on getting
robots and stuff.
Well, they kept on getting technical updates from Earth, and that's where they got the sleep.
Yeah,
the
but
sleep
the technical updates weren't that accurate the whole time.
But the technical updates gave them enough to be able to go into cold sleep.
Yes.
So if they'd have just sent, was it 12 light years away? I think it was, wasn't it? So
yeah,
they could have sent messages back. They said, "Look, we've analyzed this prion. This is what we found. We it's going to kill us, but." Send us help. We're going to do some stuff here, but 99% of us are going to go into hibernation. They could have done that. I mean, this is I was expecting the story to go, you know, all of this time. Yeah. As soon as I knew there was like the, you know, the sleeping thing, and I'd be like, oh, what you should do is just put them all into cold sleep, approach the sun, slingshot around the sun, be back at Aurora, slow down again. And of course that wasn't going to work, but it was all these different kind of things. So I was thinking, oh, this would be the way it would normally go. But it always went the other way. And I'm not saying it went the easier way. It was certainly more daring and more experimental.
Yeah.
But it's all like, no, that the main thing that this civil war started about was, you know, it was about these people want to go home and these people want to stay. Or these people want to carry on and fulfill the original mission. These people want to go home. Every other science fiction story and author would have followed the people who stayed in the Aurora system.
Yes. And because here, that would have been the more science fiction.
That's the more science fiction outward looking, hey, we're in the future. Science is great. Science solves
problems. So you're saying that the current science fiction is getting too pessimistic?
No, I don't see this book as a I don't really see it as a pessimistic book. I mean, in some not pessimistic, just sort of like kind of addressing, is
realistic,
is science fiction just pure wish fulfillment? Is it just pure fantasy? Like you know, you have fantasy books which, oh, it's just fantasy, there's no rules, you know, it's about magic and stuff. But this is a book which kind of goes straight on to science fiction, like hits it straight on and just goes, look, we're talking about humans,
yes,
which are where they're weird, and space, which is really, really hard and deadly.
Exactly.
And in a way, it comes down to this thing about like going to the moon was actually too difficult. Like, it wasn't economically feasible to go to the moon when America got to the moon. They only did it because they funneled like 5% of the GDP into getting to the moon or not. And it was a bit of a stupid thing to do. Technology wasn't really ready to do that. Technology is probably ready to do it now because we've sent, like, India can send stuff to the moon, like rovers up to the moon. But America had never landed anything on the moon before they landed humans on the moon.
Yes.
If you think about that, that's crazy. They didn't even know how thick the dust was going to be or how deep it was going to sink into. They just didn't know what it was going to be like, you know. Russia had flown something around the far side of the moon. That's why all the craters on the far side of the moon are named after Russians and things.
Yeah.
But America had never... They were just like, no, humans on there is the most important thing. And you're reading Aurora, you're like, oh, that's the same kind of thing. They shot themselves off across space before the technology was really ready. It was like barely ready.
Yeah.
If they'd have waited another few hundred years or 120 years, they'd have had cold sleep, and everyone could have gone to sleep, and the same people who wanted to colonize Aurora when they set off would have been the same people who would have been alive when they arrived. You know, it wouldn't have been seven generations later. It would have been the same people. And if some people started dying on Aurora, they'd be like, oh, okay, well, let's move on to this other place, or let's move on to this other system. Everyone will be an expert and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
And you realize this is a story which is about the reality. It was a moonshot. You know, like, that's even what it means. Oh, we're going to do this moonshot kind of science experiment. Yeah. It might work, it might not work. And this is a story about the people on the other end of them going, no, it didn't work, and going back home.
Yeah.
If they'd have set off 120 years later... Mm. Or 200 years, or however long it is, like 200 years later.
They might have just arrived in one generation.
Yeah, they would have arrived in one generation, and it would have been all the children of the people who set off, or whatever it had been, like one step, or no step, it would have been the same people. Yeah. And really, that's the kind of, that would be the follow-up book. It's like, what lessons do we learn last time? Okay, everything that we know about prions, let's work this out. Can we sort it out? Let's go back.
But overall, I really like this idea. I forgot the word that he called it, but I really like the idea of that if a planet is able to be inhabited, there will already be something there.
It's kind of the inevitability of life kind
and
of thing.
And if there is nothing there, well, then...
It's probably a bad spot.
And I totally see that.
Yeah.
That this could be it. And then it's difficult...
Prions on Mars, anyone?
Well, I don't know. But this is the whole point about...
Prions?
What are we here?
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the books that gets you really deep into thinking in certain ways that could just go on for ages.
Like, it's this
kind
podcast.
Of a lot, like, philosophical in many ways that other books, like, for example, P.T.F. Hamilton.
No.
No.
Adventure, spaceships, aliens.
No philosophical going is anywhere. It's just amazing, good story and fun adventure.
Yeah.
No philosophical, oh, I should maybe think about this a bit deeper.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. This made me think about science fiction. It made me think about exploration in a way that a lot of science fiction wouldn't do, like, or doesn't do, because it's a story about us going to the stars and a generation ship, and I'm like, oh, that's a nice story, but it doesn't make me think about those things. It's a nice exploration of those things, but it doesn't make me think deeply about, should we be going to the stars, should we be trying to colonize Mars, should we, or like, what is the reality of this situation, or not even reality, but like, what are the real options, like, and that's what this science fiction is. That's what I really like about science fiction. That science fiction can even be science fiction of science fiction. It can be like a separate thing aside from itself.
Yes.
Which I'm sure other fiction can be, but it's. I'm just saying this is an interesting exploration of. It's like, it's not like an exploration of a theme. It's an exploration of an exploration of a theme. Like, it's like, okay, why are we exploring this theme? Like, let's explore why we explore themes in science fiction. And of course, that's not what this book, it's not a stated goal of this book, but it kind of works at that extra level that most science fiction books, certainly just sort of like this kind of space opera, well, not really space opera, but you know, that kind of like colony ship, epic, sweep,
often
the kind of things.
Often you just have like, you have something set
science fiction
in the science fiction world, which then is just... An adventure, interaction, human relationship exploration, which can happen in any kind of setup.
Yeah, totally. I understand. As I was talking to you about the star fraction, which I'm like, union organizing in a weird kind of like libertarian dystopian future kind of thing. Turns out boring union organizing
doesn't get more exciting.
Doesn't get any more exciting in the future.
All right.
Anyway, so may or may not review that book, but let's get to it.
Okay,
we have been talking a long time. This is an hour and 10 minutes. I think
we wanted to give the star rating in the middle of the podcast.
No, I said we weren't. We were just going to give a recommendation to read it.
Okay.
To be wrapping up, this is weird because I did actually finish reading this quite a long time ago. Like I say, over a month ago.
Yeah.
As I was reading parts of it, it was a weird fluctuation between 2.5 stars and 5 stars.
Yeah.
Like, as I was going through, I was like, this is amazing. Oh, this is getting a bit boring. Oh, it's amazing. You know, but those low points, I don't want to be an apologist for a book. It's like, were those low points written a bit too long? Mm-hmm. And was it written for people not like me? It's like, you know, because I kind of settled into those things, those ideas and tropes that I'd read in so many other books.
Yeah.
I settled into them quite quickly, but maybe other people would need longer time to settle into them so it didn't.
Yes,
you know,
but
they
it
wasn't
had, so was, quick for them then.
It was more, so they didn't go down a swing quite so low before. So it was, they were swinging between 5 stars and 3.5 stars rather than 5 stars and 2.5 stars.
Yes.
So in a way, like overall, when I finished this book, I was like, great book. But I never thought 5-star book.
Yes.
You know, so I think I'm going to just give it 4 stars. But I'm just saying this is a 4-star book with elements of 5 stars and elements of, I wouldn't say 2.5 stars because I think a lot of those were setting up for the big payoff.
Yes.
But, you know, it was swinging between 5 stars and 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
And overall, I'll give it 4 stars, I think.
For me, it was quite difficult. Not quite that easy because it wasn't easy for you. But I finished it yesterday and I just put down on Goodreads that I finished it. And then the review came up and I was thinking, oh, how much stars would I give it? And at the beginning of the podcast, I would have given it 3 stars.
Really?
Just because it's like so kind of, as I said before, with a pour, I didn't feel too much tumbled and like...
You're just hanging out in the
book. I was hanging out in the book, relaxing. But now talking about it, how many like deeper things this book opens up.
Yeah.
Questions. And as I just said, when I was reading the book, how I imagined myself in that situation, how I would feel, how I would... be lost in space there, having all these topics to think and talk about. I think I will also give it 4 stars because it has more to it.
You needed just a little bit of distance from it.
I needed
it from
a little bit of
night.
Distance and a little bit of thinking and mostly talking because I'm a talking things through person.
But this is the when you're reading, you're like, but what about this? And I was like, let's just. I want you to finish the book first because I think it like at any point I could have said something which would have just completely screwed up. something in the future. Not spoiler-wise, but like, I didn't want to tell you how to think about this. And I didn't even tell you if I'd enjoyed this book or not, did I?
No.
I can't remember.
No,
I just said, keep reading.
Yes.
I did, like I say, but it is one of those books that the sum of its parts, I think, is stronger than all of its parts. Like, once you put this whole book together and get through to the end and you look back at the journey you've come on and go,
yes,
you're like, wow, that was a really great journey. That was actually something really impressive. But I totally understand if you read that last page and just go, well, but what about the ship and what's going to happen now? Yeah. So did you have any other notes, or should we just leave it there as a 4-star book?
I think we should just wrap it up, 4 stars.
Yeah. And I think... just to come back to the award winningness or the award nomination, I think what we've explored here in this podcast kind of shows what the reasons why it will appeal to so many people, because I think there's so many things in here.
And it's different than other science fiction.
Yes, but it's the same as so much science fiction.
Yeah, it is still hard science fiction, but on a very philosophical level, which normal hard science fiction just isn't.
Yes, true. Just isn't. Right, 4 stars. Let's. I did the Audible ad earlier, didn't I? So I don't need to do that now. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can follow Juliana on Twitter as well. Did you get any new followers from the podcast?
Well, I didn't know.
No, I just said like last week, I was like, hey guys, I'm at like 980 something Twitter followers. I said, let's boost me over. Let's get me to 1,000 Twitter followers. Fuckers, nobody else is interested. Like, I've only had like a few more, well, actually 2 more people, but only like it's been spam accounts and bots and stuff. And I always have to cancel them out and like to block them and stuff. So come on, let's get me over 1,000 Twitter followers. I'm appealing.
Luke is totally a number person.
But I've been almost at 1,000 for the last 2 months or something. I'm just like, what's going on here? So I put out really good stuff on Twitter. Actually, I don't post very much on Twitter at all. Maybe one tweet a day. If you can deal with low volume, one tweet a day, you can become my Twitter follower. You can become my friends on Goodreads. Oh, Juliana's on Twitter too. JUKU Berlin. Yuku Berlin.
Yes.
Because we only have names which have U as second letters.
True.
Luke Burridge, Juliana Kunzendorf. It's Yuku Bulu, if you want to do it. Anyway, so...
this should be the name for the podcast.
Yeah. New podcast. Luke and Juliana chatting. We're going to call it the Lu Yu Buku podcast. Right. You can become our friends on Goodreads. This is a great way to get in touch with us and to chat with us. You can follow our reading, so you can see when Juliana finishes a book or when I finish a book. And we can also, this is the best thing, we can see what you think about books as well. Actually, I haven't done this. I didn't really look on the... I have the Goodreads page and the Wikipedia page open for Aurora and didn't look at it once in this whole time.
Well, so my friends, 16 of them, review that book.
I have 63 friends.
And they have a 4.2 average star rating.
This has got a 3.95 average rating of friends. That's 63 listeners of the SFBRP, generally, that's how it works out, have read it or have mentioned it, and quite a few people have rated it as well. And generally 3.78. Hey, we've actually kind of wrapped up like the general vibe of this book. It's generally a 4-star book, I think.
Yes.
And I think generally a 4-star book is a good recommendation. So not perfect, but certainly interesting, worth reading, definitely. Become my friends, SFBRP listener group there as well. Email me, luke@juggler.net. I do read and reply to every email that I get. If you've got some interesting questions or comments or anything like that, that's about it. Anything else to say?
Nope. Good night.
New episodes coming soon. I'll actually remember. I keep forgetting to review the first 15 lives of Harry August. I'll get to that soon. Okay, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.